We are taking a break from the podcast for this message. Ever wondered how to move beyond blame and start truly learning from work? The Hop Beginner's Guide series is your step-by-step companion to doing safety differently. Written by Brent Sutton with insights and contributions from Todd Conklin, Jeffrey Lith, Brent Robinson, and others, these guides bring real stories, practical tools, and clear explanations of the five Hop principles. Whether you're a leader, safety practitioner, or supporting frontline workers, you'll discover how error is normal, context drives behavior, and learning is vital. Start building capability, capacity, and resilience today. Search Hop Beginners Guide on Amazon, because better work begins with better learning. And now, back to the podcast.
Sheldon Primus. Welcome to the Safety Consultant Show with Sheldon Primus, where we blend safety smarts with business brilliance and a pinch of Sheldon's signature wit. Whether you're a safety pro, a fresh-faced consultant, or just safety curious, get ready for a show that'll educate, entertain, and elevate your safety game. Let's dive into the art of consulting with your safety sherpa himself, Sheldon Primus.
This episode is powered by Safety FM.
All right, gang, welcome to another episode of the Safety Consultant Show. I'm your host, Sheldon Primus. And this is the show where I teach you about being a safety consultant. We talk about a bunch of things, including some OSHA compliance stuff. Talk about a whole bunch. Just want to make sure that you guys are ready for your career, ready for your job. And today, got a special guest with me. I've got my new guest, a new person I'm getting to understand, get to learn a little bit about, Corey Sherman, the founder and CEO of Safety Systems Management. He is a certified safety professional, as well as he has a master's in safety and security and environmental management. And Corey, thank you so much for being part of the show, man.
Hey, Sheldon, appreciate you bringing me on.
You are so welcome. Oh, well, I've been kind of looking everything up with your company and your emergency management system. And I work with construction quite a bit. And, man, that's a good idea. How'd you come up with that one? Well, first, tell everybody what it is. And then, I don't want to steal your thunder, so tell everybody what you came up with. And then tell me how the story that you got to.
So we came up with a mobile communication tower that gets deployed out on the construction sites and general industry areas that provide emergency notification with pre-recorded messages or live voiceover. And there's actual other types of communication you can get out to the field or job site within the system. But it operates off radio frequencies, and it is a la carte. You can have one mobile communication tower out there, which consists of two PA speakers, LED strobe lights, and pull pendants. You can have one, or you could have 300. So they're wireless, mobile, plug and play. So you can have one in a location. If you need to unplug it and move it, you just move it out of your way or to your new location, plug it back in, and you're ready to go.
And from what I hear, from the you're looking at to really help make sure that the whole area, from top contractor to the person who's sub, you want to make sure that they all get the same message at the same
time. And having that real time information during an emergency is paramount. Especially during fire, active shooter, weather event, lightning, tornado, the faster you can get an entire message out to the whole job site, everybody involved that's on it, the better results you'll have, and potentially saving lives.
That sounds like it came from a story.
Yes, it definitely did. It was built from the field. So I've been in the safety field construction side for 15 years. But coming up with this idea, I was working for a top 20 general contractor in Atlanta on a 20-story high rise. And National Fire Month, I ran a fire drill with the industry standard of the air horn and bullhorn. And took me over 45 minutes to get everybody off the building. And yeah, a long time. And that's me running up through the building and having other people trying to get word out to everybody. And you're just like, this is unacceptable, especially after 45 minutes. Yeah. So I was like, there's got to be something better out there in the, you know, marketplace. And I couldn't find anything. So that was back in 2016. And so I was got with my brother. He got back from the Army, and he was in telecommunications in the Army Corps. And so we kind of started developing this communication tower and found some wireless technology to go along with it. And ended up getting the patent on the mobile communication tower. And I went full time about 3 years ago, getting this out into the market. And we've been steadily increasing, slowly but surely, pushing the boulder up the hill. Changing an industry norm is very tough, especially in construction.
Well, they're not known for having, you know, foresight. Everything's always like managing right now. What can I do right now?
And being reactive to a situation instead of proactive.
Yeah. Are you seeing like when you get to construction sites, because now that you're full time, you've got to promote and you have to, you know, shake hands and then get to know the GCs, general contractor, for those of you not familiar with construction. Are you starting to see where there's a need? I know that you know that there's a need. Yep. I know that there is a need, but are the contractors seeing it?
Yes. So most every safety professional I run into on the construction site is like, this is very well received and needed on site. So I'm, even within the general industry, I've had some, you know, the crossover guys I've dealt with on the third-party safety inspections. Usually they don't ask what their emergency notifications are, but when you ask them, it's either air horn, bullhorn, or text message. And yeah, we all know that text message has its downfall. Everybody's missed a call, text, silence. It may come 20, 30 minutes later than it was sent out. It may never get to you because they're such mass text. Sometimes carriers think they're spam. So,
that's true.
And so, you know, I've missed a few calls from my wife before, and you know, that's never well received. So it happens to everybody.
Why didn't you respond? That's right. Where you at? Right. I had one client who the general industry, and they're doing warehouse style work, and what they would do is they had two air horns, one in the front, one in the back, and no matter who would signal the air horn, the other side would have to signal back with their air horn that they received that signal, and then from there they would get out of the building by the air horn system, if you would. I guess in some application that would work, but you're really presuming a lot that people don't have headphones in. You're thinking about what's our noise level this day? Is somebody in a forklift? All that stuff has to go through your mind if you're going to use that type of system. And again, necessity, you got to do what you got to do to make people, you know, become aware. But as far as being ideal, I had to truly talk to them and say, hey, there might be some limitations of what your system is. Let's think this through a little.
And say if there's a tornado outside, you don't want everybody evacuating out to the outside, you know. Depending on your active shooter protocols, whether they're in the parking lot, inside the building, there might be some different scenarios that the information needs to get out to them. And a air horn might not be able to be capable of that. So yeah. With our system, you're able to do a live voiceover to provide that information if you don't have a pre-recorded message mm-hmm. for your specific scenario within an emergency.
How's the listener getting it? Is it going to be on a PA yes. system, or is it more of
yep, okay. PA?
And any capability of having it on like a mobile transmitter type thing, you know, like old school where you had your broadcast station on AM. I'm from New York, and back when I was growing up, we would have an AM broadcast station to let us know what schools were going to be closed, you know, and we're all huddled around right. the little transition radio, and they're trying to figure out if our school's closed. You have that technology yet?
So we do have a SMS texting module in the base station that you can activate the system, whether it be a pre-recorded message, LED strobe lights. You can set the system up to play a radio station. You just have to get it programmed for that. I know, so we just installed on the JFK Airport expansion in New York. Some of the guys were kidding, but they're like, we might start doing daily announcements, you know, announcing the Jets game and the New York Mets game and stuff like that. So
just not my Mets. Don't announce any okay. Mets game. Do you be like announcing when we collapse again? Because that's my hometown. That's my actual hometown airport. So
nice. Yeah, well, I'm an Atlanta fan, so we don't have much to talk about either.
You had your day, man. Smoltz That's was right. the man.
Back in the day.
Well, I know with broadcasting, I know there's a lot, especially with your EAP, emergency action planning, and you're in the emergency management field. Seconds yes. count, right? So getting everybody aware of what to do and then executing. And I tell my general industry, well, construction as well, look for the windsock first. You know, that's for those of you not familiar with that is, it's imagine a fabric traffic cone, those orange cones, if you would, and it just blows with the direction of the wind. And then at that point, the nose of that cone is pointing you to the wind direction. So you have to go crosswind, upwind to it to make sure you're not going to be in the path of any kind of airborne contaminant. So I always tell my construction general industry guys, if you see an actual windsock and you have an emergency, that's the first thing you're looking for. You're looking to go that way. And I guess now with the broadcast system, you guys have the ability to tell everybody right away, hey, quadrant A, quadrant B, whatever it is, which is, you know, crosswind, upwind of the right. windsock. That seems very valuable to me.
Absolutely. So I just had a buddy that is one of the safety directors here in the Atlanta area with Skanska. They have a data center build going on in a big industrial area. One of the food processing plants right next door had an ammonia leak, and all their systems failed. They don't have ours on site as of now. Hopefully that it may change it, but their air horns and their text messages failed getting everybody out of the building and evacuated to their muster point to leave before it got to the building. So you got to look wow. at the direction of the wind and, you know, you'll be able to point them in the right direction to head to with a system like ours.
Yeah. Wow. Well, let's switch gears a little to the business side, since a lot of my listeners are going to be trying to start their own business and try to figure out a few things. They're more on the service side, trying to become consultants themselves. When we go into these industries and we see a lack, such as not having emergency management and planning and everything else, we have to address that ourselves and tell our clients in our recommendations here, we recommend this, we recommend that. We also have to find a client. Right. That's one of the biggest things, right? For your job and for what you guys are doing, and I say you guys, with you and your Kyle, yes. Your brother, correct?
That's correct.
So you and Kyle together have to go out there and pound a pavement to get new business. Yeah, what kind of tips do you have for the same activity, I guess, for my listeners that have to shake hands and get new clients? What's been working for you?
Well, so getting out there, building relationships, even small relationships that you've made in the past. Simple call saying, hey, I've got my own company. This is what we're doing. And if you know of anybody, or if the time comes where you think you could use us, I'm here and here's my information. Simple steps like that. On my front end, I started the company in 2016, but didn't go full time until 3 years ago. You have to place those relationships and, you know, find the people that need what you're offering and say, we're here if and when you need us. And you have to do some of your cold calling, call around to the clients you're looking for. You know, depending on size and scope you want is how big your client, but simple cold calls can help too. It's not the funnest or great thing to do, but it can go a long ways.
Yeah. Sounds like you're old school. That's like the old school way of going out there. That's what I do. Got to do the cold calling, got to shake some hands, show up at a couple of these events such as ASSP or the National Safety Council.
Absolutely.
Since you have a product, you can, you know, get a booth and everything else. But I do see the advantage of, you know, doing cold calls, LinkedIn profiles, look through LinkedIn profiles and see if there's somebody in your area that may need some help.
Absolutely. And the use of technology is big. I don't use AI that much. I use it in some, you know, housekeeping tasks, stuff like that. I'm sure there are some people out there that you can get. There's a company called Seamless AI. It's a information scrubbing technology that you can search any name, type of industry, by title, and it will scrub the internet for all of their information, from cell phone, work, email address, and all that stuff, depending on your tolerance of what you like to pay. And keeping up with your CRM stuff, with contacts that you make that you want to follow up 2 or 3 months later with, to make sure you got a list that you can follow to do that, usually helps as well.
Yeah, I always hear that the key is follow up, because honestly, you get to see and meet a lot of people, but if you're not top of mind, then they can forget about you pretty easy.
And
so how do you do that? Do you have any way of making everybody, making yourself top of mind to everyone?
Well, trying to find their pain point. And a lot of safety professionals, this is a big pain point. It's just not so aggressive because it doesn't happen all the time. I know I've got Google alerts that come to my email every day for construction, fire, workplace shooting, and then I'll go dive into that incident, try to find the company involved on it, and say, hey, they just had a pain point, and we've got a solution for them if they're willing to look at it.
That's great.
The pain point can be very dear to somebody it just happened to. You know, a company who's just had an OSHA violation that doesn't have any type of safety inspector, you know, that is a huge red flag. And they're going to have a big pain point that's going to be to the top, the pain point. And we've tried, you know, on the ground, the safety guys, you know, they're all pretty receptive to products and what your service are. Getting into the upper side with the money guys has been the more difficult task. because
yeah, the decision makers.
Safety has no budget until it hits the project manager's bonus. So
unfortunately,
sometimes you have to, you know, get to a point where you're fighting for yourself. You meet the safety guy, and that safety guy wants to fight for what you're providing.
Or, for
that company. You meet a frontline guy, the foreman or superintendent, that says, hey, we need to get safety more involved. We need inspections. We need this. We need that. And get them on your side fighting for you to help push your product.
Yeah, no, that's good. And as a let's say a companion thought, how do you use your product and the service that you guys provide, and then get that where the actual end user they now get incorporated in it, they start using it, and they don't get intimidated by what they have? Because there's some people that will love the product, love the service, and then all of a sudden they get intimidated and it never gets used. Is there like what do you do for that portion?
So our product is pretty low technology but high impact. When we go on the site and train guys on it, the field staff, it's a short 30-45 minute training, and they are able to, from what we provide with our quick reference guides, they can train the next person within their safety cohort to operate the system. Keeping it simple at first, it can get detailed on the back end, but making sure they have an outlet to reach out to us, make sure that when they do reach out to us, we're responding, and that they feel that, hey, if we're using this, we have issue, it will be taken care of, or we have a training, something, we'll come back out and, you know, depending on the relationship, at no cost, just making the customer happy and making sure they like the product, they're using it, check back up on them a couple months after, say, hey, is everything going good? You need anything? Has really gone a long ways.
Good. And for those of you listening, as Corey's telling you, the path that he uses for keeping, I guess, onboarding his clients, it's the same thing for us in service field when you're trying to get a, forge a new relationship with your people that you're going to be consulting for. You got to do the follow-up, too, just to make sure that you just don't leave them with, here's what I found in my mock OSHA audit, and see you later. You got to help them with implementation, see how you could get them to pick the things that are most important first, and then work your way down. That's all part of the full service of consulting. It's not just finding fault. You got to say, what's next? Absolutely. What do I do next? And every good business always has that that idea of what's the client looking for next, and you answer that need.
And when you can't provide the need they want, try to make sure your resources that you have close. Say like you've got somebody to do in-house training, you know, have another consultant that does specifically in-house training, and or as a traffic specialist, that you can provide the service via your network and bring them in with you, or say, we'll provide that service, here's the cost, and use your buddy or other consultant friend to do it. And don't be scared to put a markup. Yeah. It doesn't have to be big, but if you have a trusted other safety professional to bring in under the umbrella, it helps a lot having multiple resources all around you.
What do you say? That's great advice. I don't want to sugarcoat that in any way. So definitely markups are it's a referral thing. If you ever heard of affiliates, you have so many different organizations. If you like a product and you want to promote the product, they'll give you a bonus to it, and it's not going to cost you extra. So you know that affiliates are being used in many different ways. you're doing the same thing when you're helping promote someone else and they could do the service. You're looking for your client to get what they need. However, you could be the middleman, if you would, then that's fine to get a fee for that. So don't feel like you're doing anything unethical. People are constantly doing it. So just to add on to what Corey was saying there, Corey, let's say you're going to start your new safety officer. You're walking into, let's say, construction, and it's a hot mess. And you now are responsible to break a bad habit, and just pick any habit that you think of that would be the top bad habit you see when you walk into a construction site. So tell us what that habit is first, and then how do you break it?
Well, depends on the habit. We'll just go with the easy one: safety glasses.
Ooh, yeah.
So walking on the site, you know, you need to meet the GC or owner, and you want to try to establish, hey, are they bought in on the safety side, and find out if they are performing what they're supposed to when they go out into the workplace. Because that's going to be hard habit to break if the plant manager or head superintendent is walking out on site without his safety glasses. And to go in to make sure that's good, and then you can go out and get the blessing, say, hey, look, this is something I see, and if you're not doing it, we need you to get on board, and then we can start addressing down the line. That's kind of how I've seen it in the future.
Yeah, that's a good one, because honestly, a lot of that behavior is modeled. So when the worker sees, especially the higher-ups, not doing the same thing that you should be doing, then they're not going to follow what, you know, you're, as the supervisor or foreman, is ignoring. They'll say, well, it doesn't mean that too much to you. Why do I have to do it? That's a good answer. See, I threw that on you, and you just hit the ground running with that one.
I've seen that many, many times.
Is there like a, let's say, one company that may come to mind that they have practices and that you think should be modeled from, and you don't have to give me the name, but the practices that should be modeled in many companies, if not all? Anybody come to mind, people, clients that you see that you're like, oh, they're doing this right. I wish everybody would do this.
Let's see. So I used to work with J.E. Dunn Construction. They implemented a safety leadership course through Caterpillar. That was pretty cool. You know, starting from the top down, everybody in the company went through the training, and they had follow-up training every 6 months. I thought that was pretty cool. And they're making sure everything comes down the line with their safety audit systems. They were electronic, but it streamlined across the company. I've seen a few different models of the software. Software can be a huge tool. I don't know if anybody's heard of HB Next. They're out of Atlanta. They do safety consulting, but they've built a software platform that is all encompassing. They're great, and they've got everything as a consultant or a company could use to handle all their certifications, daily inspections, follow ups, trainings. It's pretty awesome.
Wow. Oh, and you gave us another resource earlier with Seamless something. Yes. Seamless AI. I got to write that one down. I'm writing it down right now. I'm old school. For those of you not seeing, I have a dry erase marker and a dry erase board. Awesome. That's how old school I am. I get to teach upwards to 200 or so students every year for Certified Occupational Safety Specialist Program and Certificate Occupational Safety Manager. And I see a lot of students come through and they just look beaten down. I mean, honestly, like the management seems to only want to get OSHA compliance. And if they see somebody who's not doing something like wearing their eyeglasses, they gotta write someone up so they can prove that they're doing something in safety. And they themselves feel like they're safety cop, if you would, and not really doing the functions of safety management. Do you see that as well? And how do you beat the safety cop persona, if you would?
So I've dealt with that myself, trying to reconcile that within my early career as a safety professional. Because just getting into it, you're like, oh, I got to shut it down, make sure everybody's safe. But shut it down. Like, it's this way or the highway. But you're like, now you're having to start get into human performance and the psychology of the worker. You know, saying, hey, they might have had a bad day today. Like, what's on their mind? Safety's not top of their mind because there's something else. So getting in, finding a person, asking what their problem is, how they get to where they're at without them wearing their safety glasses, taking, you know, a second to care about what they're doing, and then say, hey, I am going to give you a ding for this. Or maybe it's the second or third time you give them a ding, and then we're going to retrain you. And this is what it's got to be on that end. But following a more worker's attitude of, hey, let's take care of the worker and then look at the system and make sure the system in place is adherent for them to do what they're supposed to do safely.
I agree.
I think that
you get the full system as being, did we set this person up for a failure?
And a lot, there's some mundane stuff. You know, I worked for an underground utility contractor for 5 years as a safety director. And this one incident stands out. So they sent a crew out to go move some things at site. You know, not a big deal. Well, a guy ends up straining his back, and we get a back claim out of it. If you start going back down, the project manager said, hey, go move this without them having a plan, the right tools, the right time of day. And you're like, if all this stuff would have been thought about for 3 seconds, this potentially could have been avoided by putting that worker in the wrong situation without the right tools and the wrong time of day. Like, you can't just blame the worker for hurting his back for being, you know, incapable or being careless. Yeah. He might have been careless at the moment, but the system in place put him in there to be careless. So when he failed, it failed incorrectly.
Yeah. No, that's true. I always think about context, and the mantra I tell my students is you have to find out when you're talking with the person is, why did they do what they did at the time they did it for the reason they did it? And that's the mantra I keep saying. As soon as you're doing your investigation and there's a human involved, their actions are for a reason. So you have to find out, why did they do what they did at the time they did it for the reason they did it? And if that mantra goes through and follows you, then you get true context. And now there's culpability probably for the worker's actions, yes. But there might be greater culpability of the situation they're put in. Absolutely.
And it travels up the chain. So that foreman didn't have a plan for them. They didn't go through their JHA, you know, that morning. Or the foreman got lost out of the communication of what that worker was doing. Who told him to go do this particular task? And why did the project manager want them to complete this task within that certain point of time? So, like you're saying, the culpability, it can travel.
Well, I had another thought that I want to get in. I know we can't manipulate your time, but what about the... like when you deal with wearable technology and you have wearable technology Is there some sort of synergy that wearable technology can have with your mobile communication tower system?
So our communication system is usually manually triggered, whether by phone, base station, or the pool pendants. But if that wearable notifies someone on site that has the capability, then you could absolutely set it off. And there are plugins, so we've got wireless nodes that can tie into any wired alarm. So carbon monoxide detector, smoke detector, water detection units. If it goes off, it can send a message back to the base station, say, hey, an event has been activated. And it can text out to a group of people saying that, hey, an alarm has been activated. So there's a couple ways it can be, depending if how your wearable is being worn and activated.
Wow. So that's like a application programmable interface, API?
Potentially.
Okay. Because I work with a lot of places that have what's called SCADA systems, Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition, SCADA. And those SCADA systems, basically you have somebody in the main control room, they see an alarm, the alarm goes off, and then they take action. So if a SCADA system's tied into yours, and then they now could get an event alarm, then at especially if it's something like hydrogen sulfide is too high, or your chlorine gas or ammonia gas is triggered in this location, start your emergency procedure at this location.
Yep. Absolutely. And we can pre-record any pre-recorded message that you'd like. We have up to 36 available slots that say if you wanted a different recording made to play out in the facility, we can have that done as well.
I guess that's like micro coaching, if you would.
So per facility.
Yeah, that's an awesome idea. Yeah, that's a really good idea. So, well, let's give you one last question. I already said one last, but let's do one more. Work-life balance. I know a lot of my listeners, I keep telling them you can't just be, you know, doing stuff, working. You gotta, you know, sure, run your business, but you don't let your business run you. So what do you suggest to the audience as to get some balance with not only promoting yourself, getting yourself out, but also enjoying life?
Yeah, you definitely have to have work-life balance. It is, if your mental state is not good, then your company or business is not going to be mentally good. And so I, you know, take time to spend time with my family, get out, exercise, go running, do a little fishing, play golf every now and again. And but you got to have it. And there's some days you're not want to get up and do what you got to do. But then some days you can just take those days off for mental health day and get back to it the next day. It happens to everybody. And don't let it ever feel like you're the only person out there, because it does happen to everybody. So take that day for yourself and do it and get back at it the next day.
Yeah, burnout is real.
Absolutely.
Well, Corey, thank you so much for telling us a little bit about your safety system management and the mobile tower. That, and congrats on your patent with that. That is awesome. And honestly, you know, thank you so much for being part of the show. Tell everybody how to reach out to you and get a system themselves.
So we've got our website. It's www.safetysystemsmanagement.com. We've got LinkedIn, Facebook, and our website that you can contact us through directly. Reach out to me directly. I think my cell phone is on our LinkedIn page. So is email. And feel free, even if you want to chat, get some advice, I'm open for it anytime.
Yes. That's awesome, Corey. Thank you so much for being part of the show. And everybody, thank you for listening. And honestly, This has been an awesome time for us to get to know our new friend. So everyone,
appreciate you having me on.
Oh, you're welcome, man. And you, those of you listening, go get them.
That's a wrap for today's safety show. Remember, safety isn't just about hard hats and caution signs. It's about business smarts, too. Thanks for joining us on the Safety Consultant Show with Sheldon Primus. Until next time, stay safe, stay savvy, and keep consulting like a boss. Go get 'em. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast or broadcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within the past hour, only examples. It should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the positions of the company. No part of this podcast or broadcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast or broadcast, Sheldon Primus.
This episode has been powered by Safety FM.
We are taking a break from the podcast for this message. Operational excellence starts with people, and the Hop Beginner's Guide series shows you how. Each short, practical volume tackles a core theme, from understanding human error to learning from events, building frontline leadership, and even applying HOP beyond safety. Written in plain language by practitioners, not academics, and enriched with insights from global HOP leaders, these value-packed books help you turn principles into practice. Whether you're just starting or deepening your journey, the series gives you the tools to learn, adapt, and deliver better work. Search HOP Beginners Guide on Amazon. Small volumes, big impact. And now back to the podcast.